بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the merciful, the compassionate. All praises to Allah, the creator of the universes and their sustainer, the provider of believers and unbelievers. And may his choicest blessings be on the seal of his prophets, the last of his messengers and his holy progeny. And in particular, may his incessant blessings ever continue to flow on that fifth member of the household of the holy prophet, on Sayyidu Shuhada Aba Abdullah al-Husayn salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi wa Yesterday we were discussing the stations of Imam Husayn alayhi salam on his way to Karbala, and we saw how he met that sheikh from the community of Ikramah, and that was at Batan al-Aqaba, not Sharaf, but Batan al-Aqaba. And there, when he meets this sheikh, Umru bin Lawakhil, the sheikh mentions to him the usual thing, saying, "Where are you going?" He says, "To Kufa." And the sheikh says, "Why do you go to Kufa?" "Because there is nothing waiting for you in Kufa except the points of spears and the edges of swords." But it is his answer that I wanted to discuss. Time did not permit, and I wanted to come to the person. The answer that he gives is pertinent, because that is exactly the answer that he gives to Aba Haram in Rahima. That is the 16th station, which we will come to tonight. But I wish to kill two birds with one stone. At Rahima, this answer is given by the Imam alayhi salam to the questioner. And the answer he gives is quite interesting. This time he says, and as I've said before, different answers to different people. This time the answer is, Banu Umayya wanted to reduce my status, and I bore it with patience. And this is exactly what they were doing, really. And this is what Ziyarat Ashura complains about. وَأَزَّلَّتْ فِي مَقَامِكُمْ. The effort of Bani Umayyah was to reduce the status of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. Typical of what goes on in the world, if you cannot reach the level of one whom you are competing, try and lower his level. And that is the game they were playing. Imam Husayn alayhi salam makes that express allegation against Bani Umayyah in this reply, saying they sought to reduce my level from that of the Imam to that of an ordinary Muslim, and I bore that with patience, he says. Then they took away my properties, as they did, including Fadak, and I bore that with patience. Now they are out to take my life. Am I just to sit and take that with patience? And then he says, "By God, if they will seek to take my life, then they will be faced with such humiliation that nobody on earth would have gone through that humiliation to the day of judgment." That is how he predicts the fate of those who will kill him. And we shall come back to that when he speaks to her. However, from there he goes to Sharaf, and from Sharaf to Zul Hisn. We saw yesterday how he takes position against the mountain at Zul Hisn, but there was no intention to fight him on the part of Hur at Zul Hisn. He gives everybody water, as we discussed yesterday. It is then time for prayer. Immediately then there is time for Dhuhr. He asks for Adhan to be recited, and immediately after Adhan, he makes the first speech to the army of Hur. He made three speeches to the army of Hur, each one of them significant in its own way. And indeed, was each speech of Imam Husayn alayhi salam the lamentation I've always had is that we do not even listen to these speeches, we don't even think about them, because they are just mentioned as part of the Masail. But there is more to it than that. At Zul Hisn, his first speech to the people of Kufa who came with Hur, because that garrison came from Kufa, from Qadisiyah. He says to them that the first thing I want to mention to you is why I am here. I would not have been here but for the fact that you called me. You invited me to come here, and that is the only reason you find me here. In other words, he was not imposing himself on anybody. That is the only reason you find me here. And if you have now decided that that bay'ah which you have made to me, that allegiance you swore to me, was not an intended one, and you wish to withdraw from it, I let you free to withdraw from it. You are free to withdraw from it, and let me then go back to where I came from. Because that is what justice demands. When there is a contract, and one party resiles from it, the other party is put back into the position in which he was before the contract was entered into. And that is precisely the law he applied so meticulously to the people of Kufa. Having said that, he turns to Hura and says, it is time for Salah, and I am proceeding to say my prayers. What do you want to do? Do you want to lead your people in prayer? And Hur immediately says, no, Yabna Rasulillah, I will pray behind you, and so will my entire army. And the Imam alayhi salam, at the Hisn, led prayers in which not only were his companions immediately after him, but after them followed Hur and the entire army of Hur. And when those prayers were over, then the Imam alayhi salam retreated to his tent. When it was time for Asr, he came out again and asked the Adhan to be recited. This time, immediately after Adhan, he asked Iqamah to be recited. And after Iqamah, he led Asr prayers, and Hur and his entire army prayed behind Imam Hussein alayhi salam. If they were Shias, because this is what they claimed in their letters, if they are Shias, they would not have been able to pray behind Imam Hussein alayhi salam unless they regarded Imam Hussein alayhi salam as adil, as a man of taqwa, as a person who does not sin openly. Now, a technical question arises, that if they thought Imam Hussein alayhi salam was wrong in refusing bay'ah to Yazid, how can they pray behind him? Then he was sinning openly. Then he was sinning openly because there was an Imam who was the true Imam, whose bay'ah was wajib on a Muslim, and that Muslim was refusing to make a bay'ah. However, Imam Hussein alayhi salam, as was his competence and as was his right, led the prayers. When the prayers were over, he made another speech. And in that speech, he was more explicit than the first one. In the first one, his intention was only to denominate the purpose of his attendance there and freeing them if they wish to be free. But you will have noticed, they did not turn around and ask to be free. They did not respond at all. So the Imam alayhi salam makes another speech after Asr prayer, and this time he says that, as I said in my first address to you, I am here because you have invited me. You have written letters to me. And I do not understand why your silence is so conspicuous. Because we, the Ahlul Bayt, have the greater right of wilaya over the Ummah, have the greater right of exercising authority in the affairs of the Ummah over the community at large. And indeed, we are the only people with that authority, as pointed out by the Holy Prophet himself in his various addresses to the Ummah, because we are the only appointees from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And if you follow us in that appointment from Allah and do bay'ah to us, that will always be better for you in every respect. On the contrary, have you chosen to make bay'ah of a person who is a tyrant, a person who oppresses you, a person who asks you to make his bay'ah by force? Is that a true bay'ah? And is that how you wish to live? Wallah, he says, he swears in the name of Allah and says, if you continue in that bay'ah to Yazid, you will only find yourself destroyed. It will only lead to your destruction. And that is precisely what happened. Each one of them who was in Karbala was not only physically destroyed, but his spiritual akhirah was also destroyed. And so saying, the Imam alayhi salam issued orders to his companions to mount your horses
and we go, we move from here.
In other words, Imam Hussain alayhi salam was totally undeterred, totally unconcerned by the presence of her, whether he is there or not, was a matter of indifference, was something that did not matter. He is on his path and he will continue on his path. And when Imam Hussain alayhi salam saw that all were mounted, and Hur ordered his people to mount, the ladies were mounted. And when all were mounted, Imam Hussain alayhi salam proceeded. And he took the path towards Kufa. Hur immediately came in between and stopped his progress. Indeed, according to some reports, held his hands on the reins of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Khwarizmi doesn't report that. Sheikh Mufid alayhi rahmah does not report that. All of them report that he rode in such a way that he obstructed the path of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. And when that happens, Imam Hussain alayhi salam utters a normal slogan in Arabic used to express dissatisfaction, to express irritation and frustration. He says, Sakalatka ummuk, may your mother be weeping on your death. May your mother be deprived of you, in other words. Ma turid, what do you want? And her, instead of saying what he wants, in keeping with his position as a commander, says, Yabna Rasulullah, if anybody, any Arab other than you, had uttered those words to me, I would have replied in similar terms. But how can I reply in respect of your mother except in the best of words and in the best of respects? Imam Hussain alayhi salam does not heed to that comment and says, what do you want, ma turid? He says, I want to go with you. He does not say, I want to take you. He says, I want to go with you to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, because my orders are that you and I should appear before him. And Imam Hussain alayhi salam gives a fantastic reply to that. One remembers the reply he gave to Walid and Marwan. He turns around and says, oh Hur, you will be dead before that day arrives. And how truly so. And Hur knew too well that each word of Imam Hussain alayhi salam comes true in life. He says to Hur, you will be dead before that day arrives. And Hur now knows too well that Imam Hussain alayhi salam will never present himself in the court of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. We saw how Muslim presented himself. He didn't present himself, it's a misnomer to say so. He was taken there under arrest. And even under arrest, he did not salute Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. Indeed, when he is questioned about it by the bodyguard of Ubaydullah, saying, Muslim, you will not salute the Amir? Hazrat Muslim's reply to that question was, I have only one Amir I recognize, and that is Hussein. And that is Hussein. What a beautiful teaching for us. Whom do we today, in this century and in this world, recognize as our Amir? Politically, practically, we have to recognize the heads of government, because otherwise there will be no law and order in the country or in any country in the world. But spiritually, are we conscious of who is the Amir? Because it is that consciousness on our part that makes us true shias. Not only that, it will make us the kind of people who, on the zuhur of the Imam alayhi salam, he will be proud to have us in his company. I said I will refer to the speech of Zuhair and Nafi bin Hilal inshallah tonight on that particular point. But, and not only that at the time of zuhur, he will have no difficulty choosing and knowing who his true companions will be, but in the course of our lives, and I know I'm talking more as a businessman when I say this, using the words of the Imam alayhi salam, using the words of Imam Hussain alayhi salam, which we discussed on the fifth night. But in the course of our lives, as we regard him as Amir, he will regard his as his Raya, as his citizens. That reciprocal arrangement always exists. There is no one-way traffic in this world. So in order to obtain His blessings in our daily lives, in order to obtain, more important than blessings, His guidance. Because when we are stuck and we do not know what to do, in matters of religion, for example, in matters of finding the right path. And whenever I have described these hadiths of Abu Saleh, people from pilgrimage losing their way, people from ziyarah losing their way, less often these days than it was in the days when these paths were not cleared and people did not travel in caravans. And they were literally taught to say, to call the 12th Imam by his dead title, Ya Aba Saleh, and he responded, I keep saying that call, Ya Aba Saleh, is not only for the person who has actually lost his path physically on a road, it is also for the person who has lost his path spiritually and is unsure, or a person who has lost his path mentally and is unsure which route to take. Does he turn right? Does he turn left? Does he go straight? Ya Aba Saleh, and the answer would be provided. What is required at the basic substratum of affairs is that relationship should be created. And once that relationship is created, one finds many a thing happen which one cannot account for, and one is shown the path by which one treads. I do not say this in vacuum, nor do I want to cite specific examples, because I do not want to divert from my topic on Imam Hussain alayhi salam too distantly. I want to come back to it. But enough for me to say, suffice it to say, that I have learnt from a number of mu'mineen that this has been their experience. And I'm not talking only of ulama who have told me these things, from whom I've learnt. I am talking from people like ourselves, the pious ones from among ourselves, saying, I was not sure what to do. I called on the Imam alayhi salam and I received guidance. Because he is the living Mahdi. There is no running away from it. He is the living Mahdi, and that is a reality. And in that reality, therefore, that guidance must come as a matter of course. Not as a matter of miracle. No. As a matter of course, that guidance comes. And comes to each one who seeks that guidance. The folly lies, as I was saying in Canada a few years back, the folly lies in the fact that we do not seek that guidance. We do not seek that guidance and then we complain, where is the 12th Imam? He is there for you if you are there for him. But that single road relationship is not a relationship they will recognize. Although they often have helped those who recognize them, even without that help being sought from them. And only last night was a moment telling me how things worked out for him. How things worked out for him in a way that he never contemplated. I therefore tend to say to the youths, and forgive me for taking your time on this, but I do finish on this particular matter. When I stayed last night and the night before, and last night I spoke in the terms of Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam, how he teaches that we make the ziyarah of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. In that ziyarah we recite after salah, first to the third Imam alayhi salam, then the eighth Imam alayhi salam, then the 12th Imam alayhi salam, is of paramount importance. Because that ziyarah, before starting the day after Fajr prayers, literally tells them that I am starting the day having saluted you. I belong to your army, I belong to your faction, and I expect help from you. And let the day then start, let the sun then rise. You live the day in the protection of an infallible. These things have not been taught to us entirely as rituals, nor are they rituals. Ritual in the sense that we perform them regularly, but they are realities which bear spiritual effects on our daily lives. Well, that is how the Imam alayhi salam addresses the army of Uhud, and this is how he moves on, unconcerned about Uhud.
Hur says, I will take you. Rather, I'm ordered to, that you come along with me to obey the law. He says, death will come to you before that, because he does not recognize obey the law. Indeed, Muslim did not. And Muslim Ibn Aqeel taught us that to him, the only Imam, the only Amir is Hussein. When Hur is told this, he repeats the question. Now Hur is baffled. He doesn't know what to do. In the heart of his heart, he does not want to fight Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Yet Imam Hussein alayhi salam is so determined. He said clearly, I will not come to obey the law Ibn Ziyad, then you will be dead. Hur may not have foreseen all that the Imam alayhi salam knew what would happen in Karbala. So the natural meaning Hur would have taken would be, he'll fight me and kill me. He's telling me that if I force him to come to obey the law, he'll fight me and kill me, and I'll be dead before he gets to obey the law. That is not, of course, what the Imam alayhi salam meant. But this was the natural meaning Hur would take. What is he to do? He tells the Imam alayhi salam, I do not have orders to fight you. I only have orders to see that you come with me to obey the law Ibn Ziyad. Imam's answer to that is, I will not follow you. Now what is he to do? And this, according to all mu'arrikhin, according to all reporters, this question and answer, was repeated thrice by Hur, in the hope that he can think, in the hope that he can find a solution, and he did. He says, well then, Yabna Rasulillah, and he always referred to Imam with great respect. He says, well then, Yabna Rasulillah, I will provide a compromise, and I ask you to help me on that compromise. So Imam says, what is the compromise? Says, don't take the route to Kufa, because you don't want to take it, and do not take the route to Medina. Let us follow a route in between Medina and Kufa, and we proceed on. I will write a letter immediately to Ubayd Allah ibn Ziyad, and I will tell him clearly that you have refused to come with me to him and seek further orders. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, what you do with Ubayd Allah is a matter for you. I am totally unconcerned. But as for your compromise, as to what route we take, I will accept your compromise. And that is the nobility of that man. That fitna, disagreement, should not be allowed to persist. When the opposite side suggests a compromise, that compromise, unless unacceptable in principle, should be accepted to resolve differences, so that society lives without differences amongst its members. Imam alayhi salam, this is why I said before I started on this journey, that this journey and each station is of great significance and worthy of reflection, not merely of recitation as a ritual. Of reflection, because in each step there is a lesson. They move on now. And as they move on, Hur deliberately comes close to the Imam alayhi salam and says to the Imam alayhi salam, he says, Yabna Rasulillah, it is in the name of Allah that I said to you. In other words, this is not political now. This is not military. It is purely spiritual. It is in the name of Allah that I say to you, Yabna Rasulillah, do not fight Ubaydullah. Do not fight Yazid. Because I can testify, well, ashhadu is the word he uses. I can testify that they will kill you. And the Imam alayhi salam's words are absolutely fantastic in reply. He says, Tukhawwifani bil maut? Do you scare me with death? In other words, death is not something he is scared with. He's not scared by death at all. And why would he be? On the fifth night we discussed, and I will not take your time on it by way of repetition at all. Just remind you and move on. Those words of his which he taught, those are words which he uttered on Shab-e Ashur, tomorrow's night. He was addressing his companions and he said to them that what is death after all? It is only a bridge. It is a bridge that takes you from an area of terror, oppression and miseries into one of heaven with vastness and with bliss. Who, he said, wishes to remain in that prison of afflictions and sacrifice a palace of bliss. That is his view, that is his vision of death. So he asks her, do you scare me with death? And her shuts up because he has no answer to that. Imam Hussain al-Islam proceeds then to say, and these are beautiful words, he says, I will reply you in the way that brother of Aus replied to his cousin, saying that it is a matter of pride for a young Muslim to die in the path of Allah when he is fighting for truth, for haqq. For what greater pride can a man have that he should leave this earth going to the next world in a manner in which he has been fighting for haqq? Then he says, memorable words, he says, if I survive this, then I will have nothing to regret about. I will have fought, I will have fought falsehood, I will have been on haqq, what have I got to regret about? But this is the balance that he teaches. This logical living of life is a lesson he gives in this particular respect in Dhu Hism. He says, if I survive and live, I will have nothing to regret about. And if I die, then I will be dying with honor. What is that life with humility as compared to death with honor? And reporter said, her hearing this immediately moves away from Hussein alayhi salam, knowing that there is nothing he can do about it. But he adds one more sentence which I omitted to tell you, significant statement. He turns to her in his altercation with her and says, in the couplet, that if I die, then I will have died in the course of Allah. But can there be a greater disaster for you than to kill me? What fantastic words, the Imam alayhi salam. It certainly could be implied as a threat. But what strong words of spirituality. He says to her, can there be a greater disaster for you than to kill me? And leaves the question at that. If you do, what will follow will be humiliation in this world and fire in the hereafter. And he leaves the matter at that. They move on. They move on from there. They come to Baiza. And at Baiza, the Imam alayhi salam now makes a third speech to the army of Hur. Again, full of wisdom and teaching. He starts off after the praises to Allah. He starts off saying, "Ayyuhan nas, O people, I want to remind you of that hadith of the Holy Prophet, a hadith Muslims had forgotten. I am tempted to say that Muslims don't remember even today that hadith of the Holy Prophet, and these sittings can be a reminder to them." Imam Hussain alayhi salam at Baiza says, I want to remind you of that hadith of the Holy Prophet. And there were companions of the Prophet in the army of Hur at that very point in time when the Imam alayhi salam was addressing them. And the Holy Prophet says that if a person, if a Muslim in particular, comes across a sultan, that is how the Prophet put it, a king, I interpret it as or a sultan if you like, comes across a sultan who is tyrannous, who is a tyrant, that's the first thing the Prophet said. A sultan who is a tyrant and who forbids what Allah has permitted or permits what Allah has forbidden, has no regard and violates this, has no regard for and violates the sunnah of the Holy Prophet and treats his subjects with oppression and injustice, then if none of those Muslims stand up and object, either بِقَوْلِهِ أَوْ فَعْلِهِ, either by his words or his action, and either will suffice. In another hadith, the words are by his tongue or by his hand, بِلِسَانِهِ أَوْ يَدِهِ. But anyway, does not object, in this particular speech, the words of the Imam are that he does not object by words or by action, then Allah will consign such Muslim to the same place to which he will consign that Sultan. The place for the Sultan is hell. if he is tyrannous, if he makes halal haram and haram halal, if he does not, if he violates the sunnah of the Holy Prophet, if he treats people with injustice and oppression, his place obviously is hell. The Holy Prophet says that each of those Muslims who lives in that society and does not object to such behavior of a sultan will also go to hell. Strong words. And the Imam alayhi salam clearly says, these are not my words, they are the words of the Holy Prophet who you accept, who you believe in. In other words, he was warning them. And this is a function of the Imam alayhi salam, that hujjah, that proof that he has to perform before he goes. He tells them in clear words that if you continue to make bay'ah of Yazid, then you will go to hell. He will go to hell, you also will go to hell, as per the words of the Holy Prophet, following them as a corollary to what he said. And then proceeds to say, these people, that is the Banu Umayyah, Muawiyah and Yazid, have done precisely that. They are tyrants. They have forced you to make bay'ah, which is not their right. They have infringed your rights. They have treated you tyrannously. They have treated you oppressively. They have behaved in respect of religion of Allah as they like, regarding that as halal, which is haram, regarding that as haram, which is halal. They have totally no cognizance of the sunnah of the Holy Prophet. And the properties of the ummah, the Baytul Mal, they have regarded as though it is their personal property to be squandered as they wish. If they spend that Baytul Mal in a halal way, there might be something to be said in mitigation. But when it is squandered, there is no mitigation left. And says, if there is no haq left, there is no truth left in that society, and it is governed purely on the basis of falsehood. We, on the other hand, he says, belong to that family which Allah has blessed with wahi, with revelation. We have received revelation, and we have the duty to act in accordance with the sunnah of the Holy Prophet. And this is indeed how we Ahlul Bayt have always acted. Is it not right for you then that you should make bay'ah to us and not to Yazid? Do you have any room then to withdraw the bay'ah you have already made? You have made this bay'ah, and withdrawal of that bay'ah will be a great treachery on your part. But treachery that leads you to making bay'ah of a person who is not entitled to it and will then take you to hell. And do you know who I am? And then he introduces himself, and introduces himself exactly in the way we discussed in that first and second sitting of this session. He said, I am the son of the Holy Prophet. I am the son of Fatima al-Zahra, and I am the son of Ali ibn Abi Talib, whom you have accepted as an imam. If after knowing me, and this was the purpose of that introduction, if after knowing me you choose to ignore me and you choose to abandon me and abdicate your allegiance, then I warn you of the consequences that will follow and the consequences that will flow. And he left that speech at that. One would have thought sufficient warning, sufficient to awaken any member in the army of Hur. It certainly was sufficient, as we noticed, to awaken Hur himself, so that he could see exactly what his consequences would be. Hence his words on the night of Ashura, I see myself balanced between heaven and hell. And the choice to him was clear. However, the Imam alayhi salam moves on from Baydah, and from Baydah he comes to another station, Ubaydul Hijanat, and there he pauses. And as he pauses, Hur looks around, because Hur did not realize why the Imam paused. Four horsemen were seen coming. That relationship, I said, that we need to create between us and the 12th Imam alayhi salam. You can see these people had created that relationship with the Imam alayhi salam, distant though they were. Because in these spiritual associations, there is no distance. There is no distance involved at all. No satellites are needed. All that is needed, as the Imam alayhi salam has taught in his previous speech that I have already put to you, two things: the niyyah, the intention towards truth, and a heart of piety. And a heart of piety. That combination provides that connection between the anode and the cathode, and the light is seen. These people coming in, the Imam alayhi salam realized and stopped waiting for them, knew that without him they would not be able to join him, and their intention was to help him. Because amongst them was Nafi' bin Hilal. Nafi' bin Hilal is the one who, on the night of Ashura, sees the Imam alayhi salam in the battlefield of Karbala all alone, going to every spot. He stops at every spot, picks up some grave, some gravel, plays, and moves to the next one. Suddenly he hears somebody following him, turns and says, "Who is it?" Nafi' bin Hilal says, "Mawla, it is me, Nafi', nobody else." So Imam Hussain alayhi salam says, "Nafi', what are you doing here at this time of the night?" And Nafi' says, "Mawla, I saw you going into the battlefield. I did not want to leave you alone, lest a stray arrow might hit you, lest an enemy might want to come and injure you. I wanted to be with you, but not disturb you in what are you doing. But ya Mawla, can you tell me what you are doing?" And the Imam alayhi salam says, "Nafi', I am stopping at every spot at which one of my companions will drop. And I am praying at that place that Allah should forgive him and Allah should take him to heaven straight away." This is the reward from the Imam alayhi salam before they even fall to be martyred. This is how he has acted with his companions. But the reason I introduced Nafi' in this way is the first question that Nafi' asked him then is, he says, "Ya Mawla, show me the place where I will fall." That desperation to die, that keenness to give their lives for the Imam alayhi salam, says, "Show me the place where I will die." And Imam says, "Nafi', let us go, I will show you where you will fall. This is where you will fall." And Nafi' makes a sujda in shukr. He prostrates in thankfulness to Allah, saying, "Allah, the words of Imam will come true. Make that falling of mine a fortunate falling in your eyes." And the Imam alayhi salam prays for him at that particular spot. "I will not continue with that masjid because it will turn into masjid straight away." And the Imam alayhi salam ultimately comes back. That is the Nafi' bin Hilal. And I hope we will have time to discuss another of his speech that he made at Qasr Bani Maqatil this evening, inshallah. However, Nafi' bin Hilal comes together with three other people. One of them was their guide called Masrah bin Adi. When they come, Hud stops them, saying, "Nafi', I know you are from Kufa. You are a Kufian. I know you are from Kufa." Nafi' says, "Yes, indeed I am. But I have not come to join you. I have come to join my master, my Mawla, Hussein alayhi salam." And Hud says, "No, you can't do that. Nobody was allowed to leave Kufa. How did you manage to leave Kufa? And if you have managed to leave Kufa as you did, then you will join me. You will be part of my army." Imam alayhi salam takes over from Nafi'. And that is exactly the expression I should use. He takes over from Nafi' and says, "Hur, Nafi' has come to join me. He is my Shia, he is not your Shia. Nor is he the Shia of Yazid and cannot be the Shia of Yazid. He belongs to this camp and he will join this camp. And if, let me warn you, you do not allow Nafi' to join this camp, the fight will start now." That is a threat. You notice, Imam Hussain alayhi salam had not given until this stage. He was asked to go to Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. He said he wouldn't. He did not threaten to fight. He was asked to take a certain course. He did not threaten to fight. Hur took over charge in that place. The Imam alayhi salam did not threaten to fight. One of his Shias not joining him, and he said, "I will fight." One sees the virtue, one sees the preciousness of being a Shia of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Because this is how he treats his shears. He immediately turns around to Hur and says, Hur, I will fight. Hur, subdued, leaves the subject. Nasir bin Hilal comes and joins the Imam alayhi salam. He is with his guide. The guide, Imam alayhi salam, says, Nasir, I hear the news of the place you are coming from are terrible. And Nasir says, Ibn Rasulullah, what can I tell you? What can I tell you? I do not have the words to express what I have seen. I didn't say what you would have said. Instantly, Masrah bin Adi intervenes, the guide of the three, and says, Ya Rasulullah, you know what is happening in Kufa. Why do you want to go towards Kufa? Don't go towards Kufa. Because I am sure they will not treat you well. But I have worse fears than that of merely not treating you well. And Ya Rasulullah, you are with the haram of the Holy Prophet. Why should you seek to go to these people who do not know your value and do not know your worth? If only he knew that this is how the Anbiya and the Awsiya behave. They go to people who do not know their value and worth so that they bring them round, as indeed ultimately the Kufians came round, whatever their state and nature. However, the Imam alayhi salam says, well, what can I do? What do you want me to do? The sort of question he has asked others. And nobody was able to provide a satisfactory reply. Neither Muhammad ibn Hanafiya, nor Abdullah ibn Amr, nor Ibn Abbas, none of them was able to provide a satisfactory reply. He now asks Masra bin Adi, and Masra bin Adi says, Ya Ibn Rasulullah, don't go forward. Come with me behind this mountain. Behind this mountain of Dhu Hisn, there is another mountain, the mountain of Aja, and it's a range of Aja. And in that range of Aja, there is a tribe living, a Qabila of Bani Ta'i. And Qabila of Bani Ta'i will be loyal to you. They will be able to see your worth and your virtues and your value. They will not only receive you, they will protect you. They will defend you. They have an army of 20,000 patriotic soldiers. Each one of them will be loyal to you. Even when these kings around here get trouble and are attacked by the Iranians or the Romans, they look to us to provide this particular army to help. Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, may Allah bless you for this offer. May Allah give you jaza for this offer. Allow me to take the path that I have chosen, because it is the path Allah has chosen for me. Masrah bin Adi says, Ya Ibn Rasulullah, I dare not say anything in precedence to what you say, nor can I claim to say that anything I say is wiser than what you think. But I, from my angle, see the fears I have, and I see the protection we can give. I wish to leave this offer open to you. Whensoever you decide you want to come there, let me know. Send a messenger to me and we shall organize to receive you with grandeur. And indeed, a stage was reached when Masrah bin Ati became fearful, not sure of what is happening. He must have heard what Jibreel announced. He moves out and comes right over towards Kufa, only to be told that the Imam alayhi salam was already martyred. And he went back saying, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. That is what occurred at that particular place. But having gone through that particular offer and rejected it, the Imam alayhi salam moves on from Uzayb al-Hijanat, and he moves on to Rahimah, where I have already said at the opening of tonight's address what happened at Rahimah, and from Rahimah he then moves to Qasr-e Bani Maqatil. And at Qasr-e Bani Maqatil, the moment they reach there, the Imam alayhi salam finds a big tent already posed there. He asks, whose tent is this? And he's told, it is a tent of Ubaydullah bin Hur al-Ju'afi. He says, call him, I want to speak to him. And Ubaydullah says, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. I have left Kufa because I wanted to leave before the Imam comes. I do not want to fight with him. I do not want to fight against him. I do not want to be involved in this. He hadn't heard that statement of the Imam alayhi salam when the Imam said that he who wants to remain on the fence when an oppressor is oppressing an oppressed, he is not on the fence. He is helping the oppressor. However, he says to the messenger of Imam, I want to remain on the fence. I do not want to come and help him, nor do I want to go against him. It is because I did not want him to come in Kufa and ask me to help him, and me not having to say no to a person like him, that I came out of Kufa and here I am. I'm caught by him. Haba. And the messenger goes back to the Imam alayhi salam saying, this is what Ubaydullah Al-Ja'fi has said to me. The Imam alayhi salam gets up himself. And this is the hujjah that the Imam performs. Crosses the road to the tent of Ubaydullah and says, Ubaydullah. And Ubaydullah welcomes him, seats him. And he says to Ubaydullah, I've got the message from my messenger. If you do not want to help me, if you do not want to come on my side, that is a matter for your fortune. You know what the consequences will be if you come on my side in this world and in the next world. That choice is yours. I have come to caution you that times are bad and you may be driven to remaining here because there is an army of Hur already here. You may be cautioned, you may be threatened to remain here and join that army. If you do not want to join me, Ubaydullah, leave this place now. Because if I will cry for help and you will not come for help to me, the Holy Prophet said that the only consequence of a person who hears the cry from Imam Hussein alayhi salam and does not help is destruction in this world and the hereafter. Ubaydullah immediately says, Yabna Rasulillah, that inshaAllah will not happen. And the Imam alayhi salam departs. The reason I wish to set out this particular conversation is how illuminating it is, how instructive that particular conversation is. We men have a tide in our lives. Shakespeare says there is a tide in the affairs of men, which taken leads on to misfortune. Left to ebb, it leads to miseries and to misfortunes. You find that passage in Julius Caesar. Well, this is precisely what the Imam alayhi salam was doing to Ubaydullah, saying, come with me, it's your fortune, it's the tide I'm providing you that will lead you to good fortune. And yet he hesitates, and the answer is that if you hesitate, it will lead to misfortunes. And ultimately, Ubaydullah is left without that fortune and lands with misfortune. The great thing in life, therefore, is to take these opportunities that the Imam alayhi salam provides us. There is opportunity to learn Islam. We must learn it then and not postpone it. There is opportunity to be with the Imam alayhi salam at a majlis. That opportunity must be seized instantly and not postpone it. I say this as a matter of importance because the moment you procrastinate, the moment you postpone, you give the devil the chance to come and entirely disrupt you, affect your thinking, dislodge you from what you are doing. He must be fought before he gets the chance to fight us. And that chance to fight us pops up when we procrastinate from doing what is good. Hence did I say that those words of the Imam alayhi salam, that if I'll fight on the path of Haqq, if I survive, I will have nothing to regret but that instant decision. And if I die, I will have died on the path of Haqq. And we have no problems, alhamdulillah, deciding where is Haqq and where is falsehood. All we have to do is to act promptly. And it is that promptness that leads to salvation. Well, whilst they are there at Qasr Bani Maqatil, a messenger comes with a letter. When that messenger comes with the letter, he does not salute Imam Hussain alayhi salam at all. A very rare thing, but you can see the arrogance. He salutes her, and her replies, gives him a letter from Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. Now, her, as you remember, had written a letter to Ubaydullah saying, Imam Hussain alayhi salam refuses to come to you, refuses to come with me to you. What are the orders? And he says, stop him at a place where there is no vegetation, at a place where there is no water, but stop him on an open plain. And having stopped him in a place like that, let me know immediately exactly where you have stopped him. Hur shows the letter to the Imam alayhi salam, reads the letter so that the companions of the Imam can know what is written in fairness, and shows the letter to the Imam alayhi salam. The Imam alayhi salam says, Hur, let us go to Nineveh. Hur says, but that is an inhabited place. He says, well, let us then go to Khudira. And Hur says, that is an inhabited place. Ultimately, the Imam alayhi salam turns to his people and makes a speech now to his own companions. But the army of Hur, of course, is listening to it, saying, you see in what afflictions we are. The time has come in this world. This is a beautiful speech he makes. Golden words at the end of it. The time has come when in this world, haqq, the truth, has not remained at all. Falsehood reigns over truth, and reigns over truth in every aspect of the matter, in every affairs of men. Falsehood tyranny rules over peace and truth. What has the world come to? Indeed, what is left in this world are but crumbs. We eat the food, and after we have eaten the bowl, and all of us have eaten, all that will be left will be crumbs. Imam Hussain alayhi salam describes the situation in that metaphorical way. He says, all that is left is crumbs. They are not worth having either. Turns around and says, man has been provided with a beautiful opportunity. He kicks good destiny that Allah provides him and invites for himself hideous destiny, which when it reaches him, he will not be able to cope with it. As for myself, he says, as for myself, ana la ara al hayat, I do not see death except as a good fortune. I do not see death except good fortune. وَلَا أَرَى حَيَاتِ مَعَ الظَّالِمِينَ إِلَّا بَرَمًا. And I do not see life amongst the unjust, amongst the zalimeen, amongst the oppressor, anything but indignity. He makes his choice so clearly, that in these circumstances, death is good fortune, it is sa'ada. And life amongst the zalimeen is barama, it is only ill fortune. At this stage, Zuhair bin Qayn stands up, and that speech of Zuhair says, Mawla, we are with you, we are looking for sa'ada, and we have joined you only because we have seen where that good fortune is. And these are beautiful words, bold words of Zuhair. Zuhair expressly states where good fortune lies and says, Mawla, we see that being with you is being in good fortune. We do not want to live one second after your death. We do not want to live with zalimeen. We want to live in the world in which you live. And the moment you are not in the world, that is not a world in which we want to live either. What golden words. Nafi' bin Hilal immediately stands up and says, Yabna Rasulullah, I have lived with your grandfather, I have lived and fought with your father, I have seen how your father fought, I have stayed with your brother and fought with him, now I have the good fortune of fighting with you. And in you, I see the semblance of your grandfather, I see the semblance of your father, I know I'm fighting with the Holy Prophet when I'm fighting with you. And I know, these are the important words at the end of that speech, he says, I know that fortune lies in being a friend to him who is your friend and being an enemy to him who is your enemy. A lesson for us. This is how we are expected to live. Wali man walakum wa adi man adakum. Friend to him who is your friend. Because what is the point of being a friend of Imam Hussein alayhi salam if another friend of his is in trouble and we do not help him? That association of brotherhood is what was intended to be created. And I am an enemy of him who is your enemy, because being a friend of that enemy only means what we get away from Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And the third speech comes from Burayra Hamadani. He makes another valiant speech. From there, they move on to Qadqamiyah, where nothing significant happens. Move on to Nineveh. Again, Imam Hussein alayhi salam makes an effort to move on to Kufa, as he did at Qasr Bani Maqatil. But Hur again comes in his way and says, "No, Ibn Rasulullah, you will not move towards Kufa. You will come to a place which is open with no vegetation." The Imam alayhi salam moves on, and Abu Makhnaf says, as he moves on, he suddenly stops. When he stops, he asks people, "What is this place called?" And the people give various names. He keeps asking, "What other name?" No other names are given until he is told, "This place is called Karbala." And Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, "This is indeed the place for me of karb and bala, of tyranny and afflictions." The Imam alayhi salam, however, according to Abu Makhnaf, rides another horse. That horse doesn't move on. Abu Makhnaf says the Imam alayhi salam changed 7 horses, and it is after he changed 7 horses that he turns to his people and says, "I have now come to my destination. This is where Zuhair, you will fall." Looks to Nafi and says, "Nafi bin Hilal, this is where you will fall. This is where my Qasim and Azghar and Akbar will fall." He then calls, and this is the dignity and nobility of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, calls the people of Bani Asad there, the people who owned that land, and say, "I have come to live here forever, forever." And one is constantly reminded of the words of Imam alayhi salam when one proceeds to Ziyara, the importance that we should visit Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala, because he provided for us in those important moments. He turns to the people and says, "I will purchase this land, because not only that I want to be buried here, but I will be under the ground, but my Shias will come to visit me. My Shias will come to visit me," the Imam alayhi salam. As he thought of Nafi'a, thinks of us, "I do not want them to be on foreign land. I want them to be on their own land when they visit me. I have 2 wasiyah for you. I will buy this property from you and pay you for it. I do not want a gift from you." He bought that property for 60,000 dirhams, that portion which where he is buried and the portion around it, the portion that was then known as Karbala. Having purchased it, he says, "2 wasiyah to you, that when my Shias come and ask you, where is Hussein buried, show them my grave, at least bring them to my grave, so that they make a ziyara of my grave. And secondly, that when they come, keep them as your guests for 3 days, so that they are not without water, so that they are not without food." The Imam alayhi salam, knowing what he will go through in Karbala, does not want us to go through that. He makes that wasiyah. Bibi Zainab alayhi salam comes over and says, "Hussein, if you are buying this property, it is my wish that the property is bought in the name of Ali Akbar, your son Ali Akbar." The Imam alayhi salam says, "Very well, Zainab. That is how it will be." The property having been bought in the name of Ali Akbar, the Imam alayhi salam makes a hita of it, makes a gift of it back to the people. We ask tonight, Mawla, where was that Ali Akbar going to be, in whose name this property has been purchased? Indeed, that very night of Ashura, when Ali Akbar is with his mother, Umm Layla, despite that difference of opinion as to whether Umm Layla was there or not, but it was either Umm Layla or Bibi Zainab talking to Shahzad Ali Akbar and saying, Akbar, you have been trained for this day, and it is on for this day that you are here. He was not asked why we brought you up. He was told why he was brought up, that you are indeed the resemblance of the Holy Prophet, and you are here to partake as the Holy Prophet. And he kept saying to his mother or to his aunt that I will fight tomorrow in a way that they will remember the battles of the Holy Prophet. And the morning comes, and as dawn comes, Imam Hussain alayhi salam calls Shahzad Ali Akbar and says, Akbar, you recite the Azan. Imam Hussain says, Akbar, this is a time when the Ahlul Bayt should hear the voice of the Holy Prophet for the last time. There will not be an Azan from this camp tomorrow. There will not be another Azan from this camp even today. Namaz al-Zuhr was, as we discussed, Namaz al-Khawf. And Ali Akbar starts reciting that Azan, his first kalima, Allahu Akbar. And when Bibi Zainab he has those words, Allahu Akbar, lifts up hands and says, oh Allah, keep this voice of Ali Akbar ever alive, ever alive. I wish to say to Bibi Zainab on your behalf tonight, saying, oh Bibi, that voice of Shahzad Ali Akbar, Allahu Akbar, is in our hearts and in our ears. Even tonight as we remember him, those are precious words to us. And after that, Imam Hussain alayhi salam leads the last prayers to his entire camp, and the battle rages on. But Shahzad Ali Akbar was one person who partook in the battle with Imam Hussain alayhi salam from dawn right up to the time he was martyred. Every time a martyr said, As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah, and the Imam went to his body, Shahzad Ali Akbar galloped along with his father, saying, Father, I will be with you when a body was to be carried. He gave help to his father in carrying the body. A time came when Shahzad Ali Akbar said, Father, now let me go. There is nobody else to help you. You keep saying, Alhamdulillah, Sirin Yansuruna. I am here to help you. In the name of the Holy Prophet, I shall fight. And when Imam Hussain alayhi salam stands Ali Akbar, he for the first time prays to Allah, saying, oh Allah, I am now standing to the battlefield him who resembles your Holy Prophet. He resembles your messenger in every way, in height, in width, in his gait, in his voice. Oh Allah, keep that remembrance of the Holy Prophet ever alive. Keep that remembrance ever true. So it is to us ever true just today. Shahzad Ali Akbar goes and fights most valiantly. And indeed, in that fight, he kills various valiant warriors who came to fight him. A stage comes when, like Qasim, he also comes back. When he comes back, Bibi Zainab alayhi salam prays to Allah that, oh Allah, accept the sacrifice of Akbar. Why is he coming back? And when he comes back, he asks but one thing from Imam Hussain. Says, Father, if there is some provision of water somewhere, give me little water that I can go and kill this guy with it. Imam Hussain says, oh my dear son, what a time to ask for water. Akbar, I do not have any water, but I'll give you my tongue and put it on your tongue. It might give you relief. The moment the tongue of Imam Hussain is in the mouth of Shahzad Ali Akbar, he immediately removes his tongue, saying, Father, your tongue is even drier than my tongue. So saying, Shahzad Ali Akbar goes out and fights valiantly again. A time comes when he too sends the salute to the Imam, saying, As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. The Imam alayhi salam gallops. But this time, Imam alayhi salam is not able even to see well. He's lost his eyesight. He keeps calling, Ya Ali, Ya Ali, Ya Shahzad Ali Akbar. Here's that response and response to the father. Imam alayhi salam comes to the body of Shahzad Ali Akbar. We now say to the Imam, Akbar was with you
whenever you attend the body. Mawla, how will you alone? How will you alone deal with Akbar in this state? But Mawla is busy with Akbar, saying, Akbar, why is your hand on your liver? Akbar says, I have got a little arrow in it. The Imam alayhi salam prepares himself to remove that arrow. And indeed at that time the angels turn to Ibrahim and say, Ibrahim, watch at Hussein doing this to his Ismail in Karbala. As the Imam withdraws it, blood oozes out, the Imam holds it. All that Akbar says to him says, Baba, I am now going, but don't worry about me, because my grandfather has come. I am not thirsty anymore, Father. I do not want water anymore. My grandfather has brought water for me. And goes, how is the Imam to carry the body of Ali Akbar to the camp? He calls for little children. Little children come around and help Imam Hussein alayhi salam to carry the body of Yazan Ali Akbar. Ala la'natullahi ala al-qawmi al-zalimin. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون رحم الله من يكره الصالحين.